Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Business of Sport podcast on The Athletic. Matt Slater with us as usual. And our guest today is Lord Jim O'Neill, who since leaving government in 2016, having been Commercial Secretary to the Treasury, moved to the crossbenches of the House of Lords. He worked for Goldman Sachs from 1995 until April 2013, spending most of his time there as chief economist. Jim also served as a non-executive director of Manchester United before it returned to private ownership in 2005. A United fan, Lord O'Neill was one of the architects of the Red Knights campaign in 2010, which was an attempt to prize Manchester United away from the Glazer family's control. So first of all, Jim, what were the Red Knights?
Apparently, the Red Knights were a group of philanthropic-minded business people who wanted to take over Manchester United from a profit-with-purpose perspective or a philanthropic perspective. And we failed miserably.
Why?
Oh, goodness me. Could spend a whole year talking about it. And as I sometimes joke to many, one day when all else fails, I'll write a book on a year in the day of a Red Knight. I'd say there are three core reasons. First of all, it was ridiculously ambitious what we're trying to do. It required 50 people of thinking basically the same, which is pretty hard to do given male egos and money. My dear friend at Sky, and I still don't know to this day, Matt Kleinman, somehow managed to find out about it within hours of our very first meeting. So it became global public knowledge before we'd really developed our tactics, even though we had a strategy. So it just became this mammoth global PR store. It's quite relevant to other issues we'll get into in a way. I think it made the owners realize even more just what a ridiculous global brand Manchester United is. And it kind of ran away from us. And the third thing in that regard, I think it made them realize what a thing they'd stumbled over in terms of owning, rather sickly.
That last bit is actually, from a United fan's point of view, the most depressing part of it all, isn't it? Because now they realise what they have, and we're talking a decade on or so, aren't we? You know, now they realise what they have, it would make it even harder to prize it off them, wouldn't it?
Sadly, I think that's unfortunately the case. And there's aspects about how football and the business of football continues to evolve that simply go over my head. Somebody would have said to me 3 months ago that Chelsea would be bought for £2.5 billion, but it would require an additional commitment of 1.75 in order for it to go. I would have said you are smoking something you shouldn't be smoking. And obviously, given the history, that will make the Glazers think that United's worth much more than that. And so this sort of what I refer to as a highly unstable equilibrium of their ownership just goes on.
Jim, I want to come back to the Glazers. I really do. But let's just pick up on that point about Chelsea. What is it these very bright people are seeing in these loss-making football clubs?
I don't really know. I think some of it is probably attractive to people of certain degree of wealth where it becomes a non-financial decision, which is not the case with the Glazers, I quickly emphasise, but it might be for a number of other owners. But keeping that in mind, I suspect there are two other things that keeps them going. Number one is their failed attempts at a European Super League makes them think at some point something like that could be done for the top teams. And secondly, with it, I think they believe in this world of AI and MetaVision that there are endless ways to commercialize the global football fan still. It's not clear to me whether that's real, but I think some of the financiers behind the guys that have bought Chelsea and some of the others that are lurking believe that. It's far from obvious to me that strikes me at these kind of valuations and where we've traveled from for 20 years. It is a rather optimistic view.
Well, we talk about this endlessly on this podcast, and we come up with the same answers in that we're not really sure. But look, what is it then about Manchester United and the Glazers that makes Manchester United in so many ways are the exception to the rule? What is special about Manchester United? Why are they a sound investment?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure for a normal human being it would be anymore, which is one of the reasons it goes on. Because call it an unstable equilibrium, because I'm not sure there are many people out there in the world that would want to pay the kind of money that these characters would want to take it away from them. So that's the first sad reality. Second issue is the way the Glazers have structured this damn thing is that it allows them to do what they really want from it, which is to give them a strong, regular, sizable cash flow. That if you look closely at their past, most of the businesses they've ended up owning are basically not very good businesses and not delivered much cash. And this thing, particularly because of this weird two-tier share ownership structure where the only people with voting rights are the Glazer family, they can do whatever they want in terms of the cash flow. And that's what they really like. Third thing is, how does this brand allow them to do it? It's just because of the combination of Munich, Lord Best Charlton, Busby, Ferguson, and it just lives on in this era of global contactivity. I bemoaned to all my United pals the day after Liverpool stuffed us at Old Trafford, Mark. The following morning, if I was a Liverpool fan, I would have been furious. The following morning, the BBC football website had 6 stories about United. None about Liverpool in the headline. Couldn't believe it. But I guess that's because some kind of internet algorithm is telling them that that's the stuff that people will read. And so in that sense, I think the Glazers probably reasonably content about aspects of how this dreadful season has unfolded.
That is a really interesting point, because I've said this a few times that, you know, when Woodward made his comment about, you know, we can be commercially successful, whatever happens on the pitch, to paraphrase whatever he said, United being in chaos creates so much social media traction. As you say, internet algorithms, whatever it is, United being a shambles means there's even more attention on the club. Now, while some of that may be negative, if you are the shirt sponsor or even the shirt sleeve sponsor or the training ground sponsor, you're going to get even more coverage, because the pictures of them looking miserable at training, or, you know, heads in their hands after conceding a fourth at Brighton or whatever it may be, your product is being plastered all over the web.
I think it's
it?
True. One would imagine there is a point in time where repeated failure in terms of performance on the pitch might change it. But I strongly believe that they don't think we are anywhere near that point. I haven't seen it, but I've heard talk that there was a TikTok survey of global brands done recently, and United is twice as high as the next sports brand, which was Barcelona. And this is in the past 2 months.
Jim, just to turn the clock back a bit to the glory days as well.
Yeah.
Let's get some joy back into this conversation. And just remind everybody that, you know, you weren't just a red knight. You're a former director. You were a director you know, the last board really before the Glazers came in, the PLC board there. What was it like running this sort of club? Was it easy?
As a United fan, I'm part of what I think many from my generation, you know, we don't sort of demand success. What we demand is some kind of purpose. You know, my own personal favourite days of watching United was the year we were promoted back. The only time it went down, I've been alive. It was probably the most enjoyable year I've had as a United fan, and even the year we got relegated wasn't you know that still felt good because you knew United were trying to do something, even though it failed. What appears to be the case under these guys is it's far from obvious, other than allowing them to take cash out of it, what is the purpose of Manchester United? So going back to your question, it was very hard. And as somebody that had been brought up in pretty high levels of international finance, I was quite concerned as a director. So I was quite nervous about it myself. But it was hard, as David Gill said to me a couple of times when I tried to challenge them about exactly these issues. It was hard, which is partly why... Actually, no, I was going to say it's partly why there was some attraction to the idea of being bought out, but that's not true, because the board tried to resist it. And we didn't have any choice, because it got to this crazy situation where the Irish guys had all the shares, and once John and JP had decided to sell, that was it. We didn't really have... We tried to resist it, but they made it very difficult for us. In the rules of being a director of a publicly quoted company, you're supposed to do what is in the interest of the shareholders. And they really, really put us under pressure about that.
So when you say it was hard, was it hard just in that sense of fiduciary responsibility? You know, I work for a publicly listed company. So who's my boss?
So your boss, legally, is the shareholders. But we had our legal advisor, Mark Rawlinson. He did a brilliant job for us in allowing us to point out, if you look at the exact statement we gave ahead of the buyout, that we thought the price was fair, but we made it clear we didn't think their buyout was in the interests of Manchester United. So we tried to respect the product, let's call it, as well as the shareholders. But it was very tricky. But it was tough. But, you know, and I think not appropriate for me to get too specific, but, you know, issues about, for a brief period, I was chairing the audit committee, which included responsibility for signing off on transfers. And there was, you know, one incident where I'd signed the agreement to pay X amount of money for a certain footballer. And the next meeting, I'm told that actually he's not coming to us, he's going to Chelsea. And so it was tough.
It's interesting with shareholders in football clubs though, isn't it, Jim? Because not everybody has the same reasons for being a shareholder. I mean, you may have some who have a share in a football club because they do eventually want to sell it and make some money on it. But you also have, probably I would suggest the majority of shareholders in a football club are there because they want to own a piece of their club, so their motives are not necessarily the same as they are shareholders in, I don't know, Tesco's.
Exactly right, but that's why I personally think the proposals that have come out of the fan review for the independent regulator and some clear steps to try and deal with that issue, Mark, are probably really sensible for something as sensitive to communities as a football club. For that exact reason. You know, you can't, United has been executed by the Glazers as one of the best private equity leverage buyout deals I've ever come across, but it's a football club. It shouldn't be something that's allowed.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Is there a right way to own a football club? Do you look at, is there a club that you look at the moment and think, yeah, they're owned the right way?
What a really tough question. Three parts again of answering. So two of my longest mates who happen to be United fans occasionally, with increasing frequency, say to me, who cares about who owns United? All our owners have always been rubbish. And it's a pretty interesting point, and I sort of try to reflect on it occasionally, in the spirit of your question. And you know, there's an aspect of that is true. Second thing to say in that regard, I think it would be a bit arrogant and presumptuous of anybody, certainly me, to say this is exactly the right way to run a football club. And I say that in the position of the experience I've had of 40 years of being an international economist and finance guy, or whatever the hell you want to call it. And because I think there's not a stable answer either. I think the right way to own something has to adapt through time and with society. And so it's particularly true, I'd guess, with a football club. So I don't think it's always a stable position. But the third thing I would say is, I think particularly if it's something that is so important to where its origin is from, which, you know, some would say Manchester United is not as big as that as some other football clubs, but I would, given how far I go back, I'd actually dispute that. But I know it's a popular view, but I know what is the wrong way. And the wrong way is to treat it as a cash cow for highly indebted private equity people. I'm not entirely sure what is the right way, but that is not the right way.
I wondered if you were going to say Liverpool, but you didn't. We couldn't get that out of you. But
No, you couldn't.
Or Manchester City.
I know the City owners really well, and they'll be furious if I... You know, I really envy and respect the way they think with great depth and strategic focus on where they're taking City. Look at what's happened the past 2 days. Astonishing. But I'm not sure that's the right way to run a football club either.
Jib, what I wanted to ask you, just I was trying to... Yeah. When you were running the PLC, I know you had those, you felt those fiduciary responsibilities, and you felt them, you know, yeah, perhaps in a way that many other people in football weren't thinking that way.
No, they probably wouldn't. They wouldn't have the experiences I had.
No, exactly. But what I was also wondering was, what was it like to run Manchester United in its pomp? You know, when it was, and look, clearly you guys did it well, when it was not just winning games, but was innovative off the field. And the two are so linked, aren't they? That's, you know, one of the themes of this podcast. You know, Man United was the one that was commercially savvy, was the one that was doing clever stuff with merchandising, was the one that had sort of, you know, brand people yeah. going, oh, look at that. You know, so when you look at them now, are they just lazy, complacent? Do you still see that same drive, that same sense of innovation, that same sense of we're big?
Well, clearly not. I mean, just look at the, I mean, first of all, I think the real inspirational factors for United's great commercial growth in this regard happened before I was on the board. I think, what's his name? I hear and read a lot of this guy Friedman, who was back and forth between United and Tottenham, and Peter Kenyon and others, you know, played a really important role in fostering that. But a lot of it was, of course, you know, where you are in a matter of time, that United finally winning the league just as it became the Premier League, and with the growth of the European Cup and its morphing into the Champions League, was very fortuitous timing. And when I really looked to be critical of the Glazers' ownership, United were set up then to actually be the Barcelona of the next decade. And we already didn't, you know, to idiots like me that think about all these things and the passion of the club, we should have done so much better than we did. And it's because they weren't, and they're not very thoughtful. Go back to what I've said. It seems to me the prime attraction for them of owning United is how much cash they can take out. And all this business that I frequently read about, the share price. I mean, owning United shares has been one of the worst investments ever since it was quoted. We had the best bull market in US stocks last decade ever, ever. And United share price hardly moved. And it's because they don't really care. Quite why some of the people that own those shares who are institutional investors with no voting rights, I have no idea. But bizarrely, I would imagine sooner or later they're going to come to a lot of pressure from their customers. They are clumsy owners. They're not the most imaginative, thoughtful people.
The key point that you've made two or three times is because it is structured in such a way that they can get their cash flow in a way that their other businesses don't allow them to do. As long as that cash flow is still there, they will have no intentions of going, will they?
I think that's right. I think that's probably right, sadly. Unless there was some completely insane cash offer coming out of the blue. But from what I can see, there's hardly anybody in the planet that would do that.
What would that be?
Yeah, how could you value them?
No idea. No idea. Other than I have, you won't be surprised to know, had repeated conversations over the years with people who are at the cutting edge of the artistic game of trying to value a sports business. And, you know, linked to that TikTok, and they relate it to branding. And so United do come out right at the top of the value of any sports brand in the world. But it's very subjective, it seems to me.
And with the debt, that they have.
But, you know, really, really sensible risk-reward business types, I can't imagine why they would dream of beginning to think about paying that. In fact, I've discussed it with pretty well-known global business people who say, you've got to be joking. Why would I dream of doing that?
Is United worth double Chelsea?
Can we move on to another question?
All right. Let's have some hope. Let's have some positivity.
They put it like this. The owners would probably think they are.
Yeah, that's what I think. I'm not saying they're right. Just saying that's what they'd ask for.
I'm far from sure that they're right, but they would probably think that.
Is there any way to reboot United under the Glazer ownership? And if so, what things, apart from winning games? Is that really it?
No, I think it's more than that. I like what Gary Neville said publicly recently, but I'd go one step. I would like to see when the first day of our new manager starts that Joel Glazer is sitting there next to him and saying, we have learnt from the endless protests that as of today, we have a completely new purpose for Manchester United. It is X, Y, and Z. Because the problem, it seems to me, United have today, and it's there's many crises coming out of the core problem, is there's no purpose other than extracting cash. There is no, what they need to develop is profits. It's fine for them to want some profit, but with a purpose. If you observe the way it's owned, why would you not actually encourage people with such global brands like Pogba to behave basically the same? It's horrible, but it's kind of perfectly logical. And so the more they preside over this way, the more, you know, the brands that they try to bring to attach themselves to it, they're kind of like, well, we'll just do the same. It's horribly logical. But if you want to change it, it's got to come from the top.
Right, that's it. Don't forget that right now you can subscribe for just £1 a month. Head to theathletic.com/footballpod. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.